Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's How Do We Fix It with Richard and Jim.
Mark Earls, making better decisions and why it's a good idea to know how we make up our minds.
I would not recommend going grocery shopping if you're hungry.
Exactly.
We know that you buy different stuff. So,
or maybe don't vote when you're angry.
Yeah, that's a thought. Now, if I find myself in a bar, in a British bar, I tend to have a glass of beer. That's how it goes. That's what you have in those environments. Unless somebody else around me goes, "Oh, gin and tonic. Yes, no, I haven't had a gin and tonic for a long time. Let's have a gin and tonic then, so we both have the same thing."
Our show is about fixes.
Not the same old left versus right.
I am right,
I'm right.
And you are wrong.
You're wrong.
Yeah, something new. How to make the world a better place.
How do we fix it?
How do we fix it?
Today, Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, and the power of we. How we make decisions by copying others, our friends, our neighbors, our tribe.
The importance of social influence in shaping human decisions. Do consumers and voters make rational choices, or do we mostly rely on our feelings or our sense of identity?
Also, is emotion playing a greater role in how we make up our minds and who we vote for?
This is How Do We Fix It. I'm Jim Meggs.
I'm Richard Davies. And our producer, Miranda Schaefer. And we're also joined by one of the most interesting people I've met in the past 6 months, consumer behavior and marketing expert Mark Earls, who's on Skype from London. Welcome, Mark.
Hello there.
Mark is the author of Copy, 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 How to Do Smarter Marketing by Using Other People's Ideas, and Herd, How to Change Mass Behavior by Harnessing Our True Nature.
Mark, many of us have been shocked, shocked by the popularity of Donald Trump. So how does his story and his rise fit into your research about how we make up our minds?
Well, I think it's a great example of how people aren't really choosing on the basis of the thing itself. And that's surprising to all of us. We imagine that people consider, in something as important as politics, the pros and cons, the policies, the persona, but we don't really. Much of the time, we just choose what other people choose. Most of us fall into established patterns, but it's the people in the middle that really count. And that's where politicians are aiming. They're always wondering about momentum. Who are the people that people are talking about? Who are the people that people see other people moving towards? So popularity is very often not the number of people who see or know of something or vote for something. It's actually popularity is a function of what people see other people doing. And it shapes a lot of stuff in our lives, from the names we give our children to the brand of cereal we buy for the morning.
So what you're saying is that the way we make up our minds about politics and other things is not really the result of individual rational thought.
Oh, it's absolutely not to do with individual rational thought. All you have to do is to read any of the below-the-line comments or follow a Twitter conversation where people engage with each other about politics, and you'll see that it's very little to do with rationality. People hear what they want to hear. Our minds are not these individual calculating things that perhaps we've been taught they are. The human beings have got this amazing ability to use the minds of other people, and we don't know very often when we're doing it. We imagine, like my mother did when she named me Mark, that we're making a decision that's entirely to do with the personal, the specific circumstances. She was a, a translator translating from German into English. And so she typed the word Deutschmark many, many, many times while she was carrying me. The truth is that I am part of a cohort of British men of a certain age who were called Mark. She thought she was acting independently, choosing because I was so special and she had this experience. But the truth is she was just doing what other people were doing. And we do it all the time.
And clearly Jim and I were named by rational choice. I mean, right. Jim and Richard, very, you know, very individual
and
names.
When my son got to college, he told me, he said, his name is Benjamin. He said, and he called himself Benji. He said, "Dad, there are 16 boys in my class named Benjamin, but I'm the only Benji."
I'm an individual, right? Right, as Monty Python line has it.
Now, Mark, you've said thinking is hard. We don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
I mean that the idea of thinking that, because our minds are not made for calculation. In that sense, some people can do it really well, and you have to learn the discipline of doing it really well if you're going to be good at it. When I'm in an Italian restaurant, for example, I tend to have risotto because my wife doesn't eat risotto, so we don't have it at home. So I have it in an Italian restaurant. Now, if I find myself in a bar, in a British bar, I'll tend to have a glass of beer. That's how it goes. That's what you have in those environments, unless somebody else around me goes, "Oh, gin and tonic. Yes, no, I haven't had a gin and tonic for a long time. Let's have a gin and tonic then." So we both have the same thing.
So, you know, when Trump started this campaign, all the experts thought that he was too out there, too extreme, and really, in a way, too laughable to be taken seriously as a candidate. Is it possible that maybe he understands in an intuitive way the way that people think?
I think that's absolutely right. He's much smarter than he gives than we give him credit for. He gets that people need to feel stuff rather than think about it, that they get the impression of what he's on about rather than any particular policies. And he's managed all the way through the program to get other people talking about him.
Yeah, Whereas in all of the debates we've had that, it's all been about Trump.
And so therefore, it's Trump or nothing else. So that's a really smart, you know, positioning thing a marketing guy would call it, I guess. But he's even smarter than that, I think, because he has managed to not be nailed on a particular political promise of any particular sort. Other politicians seem to think that it's about policy lines that people make up their minds, and it isn't.
Yeah,
policies are largely irrelevant.
Yeah, it's very interesting you mentioned that, because I think Ted Cruz in particular has also been sort of stunned by the popularity of Donald Trump and keeps insisting that Trump is not a true conservative. And it seems that even social conservative voters don't really care that much when it comes to Donald Trump and his policy positions.
No, absolutely right. The policy is much less important than you think. I've done a lot of work with a major Japanese electronics company over the years, and they struggled as an engineering business to realize that people don't choose cameras and smartphones, TV sets and so on the basis of the engineering features of the thing or even on the benefits of it. It's the feeling that counts. So it is with politics. Trump keeps getting more popular because he's popular, and everyone can see that everyone else is just a bit of a political dweeb, right? By comparison.
You know, there's a parallel there with Bernie Sanders as well. That brilliant ad that he did, it had absolutely that just showed all the faces of Americans and over the Simon and Garfunkel song, "We've All Come to Look for America." It had zero content. It was like Reagan's Morning in America. Zero policy content, but a wonderful communal feeling.
So that's right. So when I was going to pick you up there on zero content, I think it's got a huge amount of content. But informational, in the sense that we normally think about it. In political terms, that might be, you know, in terms of policy. If it was a product, it might be the features of the product or what the product can do or the price. Those are messages, informational messages, that are just much less relevant than we imagine to how people decide.
You know, if you think back, Apple figured this out. Even though they were building products that were very much cutting edge, you remember the old Mac and "I'm a Mac and I'm a PC" ad?
Sure.
Everybody wanted to be part of the Mac tribe, the cool, slim guy who's really hip and does artistic work, and not the dweeby, chubby guy who
the John Houseman figure, right?
Who, you know, who probably does, you know, spreadsheets for some boring insurance company or something.
That's exactly it. One of the most useful strategies that anyone can use to get people to adopt a behavior is to point out who else does it. This is not about being an individual successor. It's about being part of a group of people.
Okay, well, you're a marketing guy, okay? Mm-hmm. You advise a lot of companies and about how to improve their brand image and how to sell stuff more effectively. Give me an example right now. What's the most difficult thing that you have to get over to many of your clients about the consumer and about the way we make up our minds?
So I think here's the most difficult thing, which is it's the space between people, between customers and between consumers. That is the most important one, not the space between their ears.
Explain that.
So we tend to think about people's behavior being shaped by what goes on with the gray matter between our ears, you know, our brains, our minds. And the truth is most of the decisions seem to be shaped at least 50% between people. So what you say, what my friends say, what we've accepted as a rule of thumb, how to make a decision about this stuff. This seems like a good make a car. This beer is okay. And how do I know that? Well, I know that because other people seem to be drinking it. Do you see what I mean? So this is the hard thing. It's that success and popularity of a particular behavior or particular choice is shaped between people and not in an individual's head.
So, Mark, as longtime listeners of this podcast know, I'm the son of a Chicago School free market economist. And so I was raised really on this idea that people do make rational decisions and they're very adept at figuring out their own self-interest. So I'm going to push back a little bit. You mentioned product. So I used to work with Car and Driver and Road and Track magazines that invested huge resources in testing cars. And those tests were based on, you know, real concrete parameters, 0 to 60 times braking times, as well as some subjective things that these expert testers could sense. Those reviews were influential. You're saying they were influential more for social reasons than for scientific reasons?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's how it works. Most of the time, even with, and I've looked at this in expert communities, for example, in computing or in cameras. It's an interesting, photography is a really interesting space. And the experts there all defer to each other. Yes, of course they have a background, but they use other people's opinions to reassure themselves about it. In the review of why the opinion pollsters did so badly in predicting the outcome of the last UK general election, one of the main reasons was that they deliberately avoided contradicting each other. Without making a policy of it, they all herded, as the classical economics term has it. So they stayed within the range because none of them wanted to be called out by Nate Silver.
Yeah, that was a really interesting example because the Conservative Party in Britain last year won a much bigger majority than any of the pollsters, or certainly the vast majority of pollsters, had predicted, and it was really cited as an example of opinion polls failing on the job.
They heard it. They copied each other. And we see this a lot in different aspects of life. But it's rooted, the reason why it's important is that it's rooted in our inability to do the heavy lifting of individual thinking that Jim, you were raising, you know, classical economics. So the fathers of behavioral economics, so Daniel Kahneman and Tversky, his research partner, their original work was done with healthcare professionals, who you'd think would be quite numerate and have an ability to read data. There was no difference, essentially, in the mistakes of the medical professionals and the patients. So they're no better just because they are professionals and experts at doing the math than the other guys are.
So it's not hopeless, is it, to study this and then figure out ways that we could help doctors get over these unconscious biases and be more data-driven in these really crucial areas?
I know. I think that's absolutely right. So I'm not saying that they're completely wrong and useless. They're quite useful, but they're not the whole answer.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Okay, well, let's talk about the answers. At this point in the show, we usually go, we're a solution show, and let's talk about solutions. So, okay, what are the lessons first for marketers or political campaigns in trying to get their message across more effectively than they do now?
So the first thing to say is the message. Think about the message and what kind of message you are looking to put across. If it's a rational message, you may not be as successful as someone who's looking to create an emotional message, which is about social identity and which might be shared, which might help people interact with each other differently. I think the second thing is really important is to know what kind of choice you've got going on, because there are many occasions where people are choosing just on the basis of habit. And there are particular things, particular tactics and strategies you can use as a marketer to unpick habits. And I think the third thing is suggesting that we copy solutions from other people rather than trying to think up the best answer ever. If you know what kind of behavior you're trying to change, you can use that as a lens to look around the world. And let me give you one simple example. And one of the world's leading surgeons for pediatrics is a guy called Martin Elliott at London's famous Great Ormond Street Hospital. But he's doing these amazing operations on these tiny kids, and they're 12-hour operations and just extraordinary. He was looking to improve the survival rate of these kids, and he identified the moment of transfer between the theatre team and the ICU team as the opportunity. And he looked around the world for other medical examples that he could copy, and he finally realized the answer was in Formula One motor racing. He's a big fan of it, and he happened to be finishing surgery one day when the highlights were on. You realize that pit stop, because
the pit stops in racing are astounding to watch.
Extraordinary.
I mean, they're very, very quick.
You and I are old enough to remember the days when pit stops took 15, 20 seconds, and they don't anymore. They take 3, 4, 5 seconds at most, and there's very rarely an engineering human error as a result of it. He did this, and then he worked with Ferrari to teach his hospital processes that Ferrari use in pit stops to hand over from the theatre team to the ICU team. So he did this because he's able to say it's a handover problem. It's not a medical problem.
And what did that do? That reduced mistakes?
So it significantly, rapidly improved the outcomes. 42% immediate reduction in human error.
So
in that one moment in treatment, which is extraordinary, right? And important, and more important than most of the stuff that I get involved in every day.
So, Mark, in your book, Copy, 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 you also talk about lessons for individuals. Like, a lot of times we put such a premium in creative fields on originality, but you argue that originality might be a little bit overrated.
That's exactly the point. And I think it's overrated in the sense that we all have the ideas and products of other people's thinking all around us. Picasso famously said that, you know, talent copies, genius steals.
Should we be more rational in the way we as individuals make decisions, or can't we fight our true beings? Should we just accept that we're emotional?
There are things that we can do to make sure we don't make decisions, important decisions, in a entirely emotional state. I would not recommend going grocery shopping if you're hungry.
Exactly.
We know that you buy different stuff. So just be aware of that. Don't make big decisions about your life when you're feeling down.
Or maybe don't vote when you're angry.
Yeah, there's a thought. No, I think that's right. Deep down, I have this feeling that we don't like this other side of ourselves, this emotional and social side of ourselves very much. It's very antithetical to our North American, North European culture of the individual. But I think it's a really important aspect of who we are. And it's something that we undervalue. Other countries and other cultures don't undervalue it so much. Africa, Asia, and Latin America have much, and Scandinavia have a much stronger sense of the we side of us. And if we can learn how to use it better, then I think we can, as I suggest in the book, copy, we can make more advances more quickly and with less pain.
Mark Earls, author of Copy, and other tracks, thanks very much for joining us from London via Skype.
Yes, thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, guys.
Before you go, I just want to ask Miranda, our producer, any thoughts?
What did we miss?
Do you think that the idea that we don't want to think applies to how we buy things in terms of calculating size versus cost or sales?
I think this is a really, really interesting point. Our minds aren't set up to do this heavy rational calculating piece. And that's why we so easily get ourselves mixed up trying to calculate the difference between a liter and a gallon, and whether it's worth it to have three for the price of two of an expensive thing or just buy three of the cheaper thing. You know, we make mistakes and we use all kinds of different solutions, different shorthands to get to that. And sometimes we can be exploited in that way. And that's why we have things like regulation on marketing and advertising. And people can easily get confused on what looks like a really good deal, but seems like actually in the end a sucker's deal. And we all feel a bit uncomfortable if we don't feel we've got ourselves a good deal. That's what that feeling is about. You know, when you've done you've bought a secondhand automotive, or you've done a deal on a holiday. You think, I've got a great deal there. You probably haven't, but the important thing is that the vendor should make you feel that you have, make you feel emotionally that you've been smart. And the feeling smart is more important than the actually being smart to us as individuals.
How can behavioral economics apply to other areas? Could we apply it to public health? Could we apply it to smoking, things like that?
So there's a huge application of this kind of understanding of human beings to some of the big problems we face in our societies today. So things like obesity and smoking and so on. And I've got to tell you, I smoked for many years and I worked on both tobacco and smoking cessation accounts. And it took me a number of years, and it wasn't the facts of the matter that made me stop and quit. It was what other people around me were doing. It became impossible.
That's a wonderful answer. Okay, yeah. Thanks so much, Mark. Great to speak with you, and
likewise.
Hope we'll do it again.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's really great stuff. Jim, we always like it when we get ratings and reviews, even if sometimes the reviews aren't 100%.
Actually, sometimes I like the ones.
Complimentary.
I mean, listen, everybody needs constructive criticism, and our audience is really core to making this show work.
Well, we got one from a guy called Thomas O'Grady, who is a PhD, which is, you know, I always look up to that. And he says, yeah, like, how do we fix it? I had fun listening to this podcast. It starts with simple issues to life's bigger issues, and this is so interesting. Thanks. So that's great. That's good.
Great. That's what we're trying to do. And for all of our listeners, if you're in iTunes, it's really good for the show's visibility if you actually download the show. We love it when you leave comments and ratings, especially if you like the show. But we're interested in the critical comments, too. Constructive criticism is always welcome.
And if you want to find out how to do all this stuff, just go to our website, which is howdowefixit.me. So, Jim, I think it's really easy to be kind of depressed about this, that we're such emotional beings and that we make up our minds largely as a result of what our neighbors and our friends and our family members think, rather than making that individual rational choice.
Yes. And, you know, I think when we started this show, one of the things I was really hoping we could do is find a way to get people out of their comfortable tribal zones. You know, so much of the ideas about how government should work or politics is like, the good people are all on my side, the bad people are all on those other guys' side. And, you know, I think you and I both believe that if you can really set those emotions aside, look at some of the facts, let's make a new tribe in the middle. You know, we've done a bunch of shows about this where we don't have to agree on everything.
Right. But this shows how difficult it is.
But this does show how difficult it is. I do think there's ways to encourage, you know, rational conversation. And we've done a number of pieces on that. It's not easy. And I think, you know, Mark's work shows you how easily we can snap into this tribal thinking, both on the left and the right. Certainly in a lot of elite circles today, universities, for example, I would say the tribalism on the left is far more intense today, and it rivals anything you see at a Trump rally.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with you that the tribalism on the left is stronger than it is on the right. I think it's very strong on both sides. But one of the people that you got me to read, and I do read him regularly, and I often don't agree with him, but he's refreshing, is Glenn Reynolds, who is a guest on one of our earlier shows here on How Do We Fix It.
Right, right. So Glenn has a piece. Glenn writes a column in USA Today. He's got a really interesting column over the weekend. And he talks about this concept, what's called a preference cascade. And the theory is that in many societies, there are certain viewpoints or ideas that are frowned upon. They're low status. And certainly in elite circles, media, universities, if you said some of those ideas, you would be ostracized and shunned. So they're suppressed. But people beneath that surface maybe start believing things. Maybe they have an issue with immigration. Maybe they're fed up with political correctness. Maybe they want, they're mad at politicians. But then all of a sudden, something happens and that cracks. And then people realize, oh, other people think this too. It's right. Okay to say this out loud. Certainly, I think part of what's made Trump's rise so powerful is this preference cascade. All of a sudden, everybody looks around and says, oh, lots of other people feel the way I do. I never really talked about it much because people might humiliate me. But now we can say this stuff out loud. I was just up in northern New Hampshire over the weekend, you know, very hard-pressed rural area, economy in decline. I saw Trump signs everywhere. I didn't see signs for any other candidate.
Yeah, it is alarming to me, but I think that the Donald Trump really has the prospect of also taking votes from Democrats as well as from Republicans. This is not just a Republican phenomenon.
You've heard me say this from the start, Richard. I submit that if Trump had run as a Democrat, he would also be popular. Maybe not quite as popular, but he's not espousing real conservative views. He's espousing populist views with a lot of macho intensity.
And nativist views and even racist views, too.
I think that if he had started out on the Democratic side being anti-free trade, anti-foreigner, there he would have found an audience.
Well, let me just pivot to something that's completely not political. I was thinking when Miranda was asking Mark about how we buy things, and Mark was also talking earlier about our emotional decision-making, my example is going into the wine store. I mean, I love wine. But I know nothing about it. And the way that I make decisions on the wine that I buy, you know, Chianti versus Rioja and Bordeaux, it's the labels on the wine. I think I know what I like, but boy, a lot of it's emotion.
Okay, this wine cost a certain amount of money. The people who know a lot about wine must be willing to pay this. I would submit that's actually a pretty good judge. You know, it's really rare if you go out and buy a $6 bottle of wine and you put it next to a $25 bottle of wine and you did a blind test that anybody who knows anything about wine is going to like that $6 bottle.
Maybe. That's $6 versus $25, but the $9 versus $15, boy, that's a total crapshoot.
Maybe. But I think the price signals actually work reasonably well.
It's a very comforting thought. The next time I buy anything that I think is a little expensive, I will think of you, Jim.
You know, you got to stay out of those trendy, upscale, Upper West Side shops.
Oh, I'm sure I can. Okay. This is How Do We Fix It. I'm Richard Davies.
And I'm Jim Banks.
Thanks for joining us. Our producer is Miranda Schaefer. And our audio engineer, Denise Barbarita.
Here at Mono Lisa Studios in beautiful uptown Manhattan.
How Do We Fix It is a production of Davies Content. We make digital audio for companies and nonprofits.